Hey everybody, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Each week I'm joined by various members of the EV Cafe, and today got the wonderful John Curtis. Welcome, John.
Hello, darlings. I'm not bringing any insight today. Our guest is.
Ah, well, John, that's nothing new. Anyway, so each week we get to talk to some of the innovators, pioneers and collaborators in our industry. And again, today, we are so blessed. David Savage from Geotab. David, welcome.
Thank you very much, Paul. That's a very grand opening. Very much appreciate that.
Well, you know, we are blessed at the EV Cafe to be working with some of the most brilliant minds, and we've already spoken to some brilliant minds in Geotab. You've got a tough act to follow in Laura Schleicher.
He was amazing.
You know, we were expecting great things, David, but we know that we will get that. David, listen, you know, how long has your life been in Geotab so far? And I'm just going to drink from my Geotab cup for all of those of you that are listening.
Yeah. So my first interactions with Geotab would have been late 2019, maybe mid 2019, when I was looking for the next challenge in my career. And Geotab ticked a lot of those boxes. You know, it involved data. There was the sustainability piece, and also the opportunity to almost grow a business from the ground up. You know, Geotab was relatively new in the market at that point. Not particularly well-known brand, massive globally, but not a strong footprint here in the UK market. And then joined formally January 2020. I was fortunate enough to do an onboarding in Canada, which is where our head office is, which was great. And, you know, I do remember sitting there with a colleague of mine, Aaron Jarvis, who I know you're familiar with as well, Paul, on our return flight, sitting in the airport there, and people were putting on masks. We were like, this is interesting. Should, you know, what's this COVID thing? We were sitting there over a whiskey going, oh, it's just like the flu. Fine. Nothing to worry about.
Hot toddies.
So I inherited the business just before we went into lockdown.
Wow. Mm. So you wanted a new challenge and you certainly got one. So is this something, and I mean, I'm diving right in here, but you mentioned that next challenge. And obviously it would be good to get a picture of your career, but is a challenge something that you're always looking for? And if so, why?
Sure. So a challenge is always something I'm looking for because I made the mistake earlier in my career of getting too comfortable. And I think that is a mistake that you can make. For some people, it's absolutely fine and they just want to be comfortable and progress. But that wasn't for me. So if I'm looking at my career and how I got here, I don't think any of us on this call probably had a clear roadmap of their career, or certainly didn't pan out as it did. You know, I can't imagine, Paul, you were walking around as a kid with a selfie stick going, I wish someone would make an iPhone and create social media so I could have a career.
This is true.
And I was very much the same. In fact, my career path probably started out in the marketing vein. I had a big interest in marketing in my late teens. Went in to do a degree in marketing, very much enjoyed that. Did, you know, an internship or a long internship at Unilever working on Domestos. Great company. But I decided that wasn't the right route for me. I didn't want that kind of structured approach. Spent some time in an ad agency, won an ad award. Still don't know how I managed to win an advertising award, but did that many moons ago. Still have it. My one award I cling on to dearly. But also didn't like working in agencies because I wasn't getting paid. They didn't pay people in the early stages of their career in an ad agency. It was come and get the experience, and if you're any good, you'll get a job.
Wow.
So went through all of that, got my degree, decided that, you know, the Unilever route or the, you know, the graduate recruitment schemes just weren't for me. They were too structured, and I wanted something where I could kind of really shape my career and have a little bit more influence on what I'd be doing, how I progress. But it was also a terrible time to graduate. It was, you know, the early 2000s. The economy was not strong. And, you know, anyone who's been involved in marketing knows that once the economy's not strong, people pull back or companies pull back on marketing spend. So I was in a bit of a limbo. You know, I was applying for jobs, getting a few interviews, not really interested in what I was going for. And then got to, I was still living with my parents at the time, moved back home after university. And my dad said, look, get out of the house. You know, he'd worked all his life, you know, never had a formal education. So he grafted all his life, worked his way up. And he was like, I'm not having you sitting here. So go out and get something. Go and do something. I was like, oh, geez, okay, that's a bit of a wake-up call. What am I going to do? So through a friend, I ended up at Ryanair.
Oh, wow. Of all places. It's your fault.
I take no blame or credit for anything related to Ryanair. And that was a really eye-opening experience for me in many positive ways, because it really helped inform what I was looking for future roles. So going into Ryanair, short-term contracts, you know, a bit of marketing, bit of flyering, and that morphed into it's kind of weak route troubleshooting, which means nothing to anyone really. But it was any routes that weren't performing on the Ryanair network, they'd fly me in with a small team and we'd have about 8 weeks to try and fix it. And, you know, you'd be looking at, is the issue marketing? Is it the airport experience? Is it, you know, whatever it might be. And what I really liked about that experience was there was no roadmap. There was no playbook. It was, we've got a problem here. Just go in and fix it. And it was very much a sink or swim culture. There were people who went into that experience, couldn't deliver, and they'd just be cut. You know, it was quite ruthless in that regard. But I really enjoyed the accountability, the autonomy, and the focus on just getting S done. Probably can't swear on the podcast, so I won't.
What, S-H-1-T?
Yes, there you go. Thank you, Paul. So really enjoyed that. And that kind of set the foundation for what I was looking for in future roles in my career. So accountability, autonomy, end goals, and just allowing me to go out and deliver. So, you know, spent probably, it was a year at Ryanair. I guess the best thing to come out of Ryanair, apart from that experience, was I met my future wife. So we were colleagues and then partners and then spouses. Over that time. And then about a year into that, I really wasn't enjoying it anymore. I was in the revenue management team, punching numbers into a computer, and wasn't the most exhilarating way to spend a working day. So moved from there, joined another travel startup in central London. Spent quite a long time there, but that was also great. Again, wearing multiple hats. You know, I was doing web development. I knew nothing about web development. I had to learn about that. I was doing operations. Didn't know a huge amount about that. Had to figure that out. Finance, recruitment, etc. So, you know, learning all of those skills, which helped inform the kind of role I'm doing, you know, nowadays. And during my time there, that kind of morphed into doing bigger projects. So I was asked to go and fix an airport operations across the UK. I knew nothing about airport operations. I knew very little about how airlines worked, et cetera. So I had to go and figure that out. And I guess it probably took me a few years to actually just sit down and figure out that all the skills I've been building up were allowing me to go in and fix things and grow things. And I was actually pretty competent at it and very much enjoyed it. So it probably wasn't until my early 30s that I realized, I don't want to use the term calling, but that's what I was good at. That's what I enjoyed. And then to the comfy seat point, I'd been at that travel company for better part of a decade.
Oh, wow.
Lots of good projects, real family culture, knew everyone. We were all super close, very supportive of each other. It was very nurturing, but I'd become comfortable. Too comfortable. But I was also risk averse, and I'll probably come on to why I was risk averse at that point in a little bit of time. But I knew I needed to change. I knew I wanted to push myself and see if I could do a little bit more in another industry, different business size, etc. But I needed a bit of a push. And that push came from my wife, funnily enough. So just to give a little bit more background there, we'd been through several failed rounds of IVF and kids weren't in our future. We'd been told that quite categorically. And, you know, we decided to take on a different project. We bought a house to fix up and, you know, all of that. And my wife said, look, you're not happy in the role you're doing anymore. We don't have any dependents. Take a chance. You know, if it doesn't work out, we still got the two of us. We'll figure it out. So that was, you know, great to have that support. And I did, you know, I took a chance, ended up in a tech company called Halo. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Halo. They were a black taxi app in central London. They were across Europe at the time. And I joined that, was taken under the wing of a guy there who was kind of trying to fix the entire business. So a much grander project than the kind of stuff I'd been doing in the past. And I guess he was almost a mentor to me, you know, and I learned an awful lot in the couple of years that we worked together there. And I was there for 4 years. And that was a real roller coaster, unlike anything I'd seen or been involved in the past. You know, it was a reasonably big company. Most of the team were made redundant. It was a small team of 10 left, which I was heading up. The business was sold, two rebrands to My Taxi and then to Free Now. You know, growth, switches in shareholder base. And then by the end of my tenure there, I was general manager for the UK business, grown the team to around 32 people from 10, and taken the business towards profitability. And at that point, I wouldn't say I was getting comfortable, but I was almost burnt out. That roller coaster was so intense that I needed something fresh. And that led to Geotab, which is, you know, where I've been for the last 3.5 years or so.
So tell us about Geotab, David, because some of our listeners may not know who Geotab are, and many of our listeners won't know what you do there. So can you tell us first who Geotab are, what you do, and then what your role is within the organization?
Sure. So I think it's interesting. So we're on the back of almost the first half of awards event season, right? You know, May was incredibly busy, and Paul, I know you were on the road an awful lot there and, you know, bumped into each other quite a lot, but we did 6 events in May. And you're doing all the networking and people are walking onto the stand. And the question is, you know, what's the elevator pitch? What do you do? You know, And I don't think anyone ever gets it right. So I was actually on the train back from the CV show knowing that I'd spoken to people and I was like, that wasn't a great elevator pitch, but also our elevator pitches weren't great. So I did what everyone does nowadays and tapped it into ChatGPT and said, give me a Geotab elevator pitch, which I have here today. So I'm going to read this. Then I'm going to give you my elevator pitch on Geotab.
Okay.
So ChatGPT. At Geotab, we revolutionize the way businesses manage their fleets through advanced telematics technology. Our comprehensive platform empowers organizations to optimize their operations, enhance driver safety, and achieve greater efficiency. By seamlessly connecting vehicles to the cloud, we enable real-time monitoring, intelligent insights, and data-driven decision-making. With Geotab, you gain full visibility into your fleet performance, streamline maintenance, reduce fuel costs, and improve overall productivity. Join us in transforming the future of fleet management with Geotab's innovative solutions. So that's the ChatGPT elevator pitch.
Good.
Not bad. Quite a long elevator ride, you'd have to be on for that one. So, Paul, bearing in mind, and you know our office here in central London, we're on the first floor. So if I was to give you that elevator pitch, I'd probably have to pin you into the corner of the elevator. And that's not a great experience. Probably not something you'd particularly enjoy. Or maybe you would. I don't know. I cast no judgment. But my one floor elevator pitch was, if I was speaking to a fleet manager, is we want to make you look good. Right? Yeah. And we do that by taking the data from your vehicles to mitigate the risk in decision-making at both a tactical and strategic level. Is it any good? Needs a bit of work, but it's probably better than the ChatGPT version.
I like that. It's a nice, punchy way. I mean, you know, David, I don't like the word data. I'd switch it out for insight, but, you know, I think.
Yeah.
but no, I'm absolutely with you. That is a good summary, and of course, I'm blessed with a good insight of what Geotab do. But your role in the organization, David, you know, I think it would be fair to say that you're not the person that is the out front kind of person visually in terms of, you know, not a front man in that sense, but you are really driving the change and the development internally. And I know that you spend a lot of time focusing on the people. Talk to me about you within Geotab and how you get the job done on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, so you're probably right. You know, I have to do the press and, you know, all of that. But I view my role much more as almost the conductor of an orchestra. So, you know, you probably don't see my face necessarily, but I'm there trying to get the team to hit all the notes at the right time, you know, so that we're creating something very, very positive. And, you know, you're absolutely right. I spend a lot of time with the team, you know, a lot of time in meetings, understanding what they're working on, but more importantly, how I can support them and unlock things within Geotab or, you know, more broadly. And, you know, that's how I see my function. I'm here to serve the team and unblock things and provide them with guidance and mentoring, not just for the career within Geotab, but, you know, a thing I've brought to the team here are development plans, and that's not focused on their career at Geotab. That's their careers. You know, I fully understand that some of the team might view Geotab as a two-year gig. You know, they get what they need to, and I think that's fine. You know, that needs to be, you know, appreciated, encouraged. Everyone has different ambitions, and, you know, I'm very supportive of that and empathetic to all of that. And that's how I kind of see my role, as almost that conductor. So when I joined in 2020, it was a small team. I think I was employee number 8 in the UK. Set about creating a vision for the business, looking at the team, and building out, you know, a 5-year plan, essentially, as to how far do we think we can go? How are we going to get there? And spent a lot of time recruiting and trying to recruit very well for the business, not just from a performance perspective, but how is that person going to add to the culture? How are they going to fit into the business? How are they going to add value to the team dynamic that we're trying to build, or I'm trying to build here? So the individuals you bring in to create a team are incredibly important. And, you know, the success we've had, and we've had a, you know, good degree of success over the last few years, is, you know, a byproduct of multiple things. It is the vision and strategy, but it's also bringing the team to implement that. You know, I love coming into work every day because the team bring it every day. You know, they go above and beyond, and I learn from them. You know, it doesn't matter what age they are, whether they're older, younger than I am. Some meetings I come out of and go, geez, okay, I had no idea there, or that person's, you know, incredibly smart, or I didn't know that about Vans. Thank you for that, Paul. You know, that kind of thing.
What is that the thing that you're most proud of, David, is the people that you've brought into the organization, or is there something else that you've delivered in your 3 years?
So primarily it's the people. And the team I've built, and the loyalty the team have shown to me, and the trust they've shown in me to guide their careers and, you know, bring them forward. And then I guess the partner aspect of that, and it is very much tied to the team, is the growth we've had, you know, in the UK market from 2020, where, you know, you'd speak to people and they'd be like, Geo, who?
Yeah.
To now where we get people approaching us. It's like, we need to speak to Geotab. We need to understand what they're doing in sustainability. We've seen this tool. We want to learn more about that. So it's been the growth of the brand and the profile of the business and the footprint of partners and customers that we have in the UK and the team. But it's the team that have really delivered that first point.
And that's a hell of a high bar, because Geotab being world's number one telematics company, you had an awful lot to achieve in not a very long time. What are you focusing on for 2023 specifically to continue that growth path?
Yeah, so we're, you know, we're almost midway through that 5-year plan that I kind of set in place. And we do review it kind of every year. We've had to make adjustments because of COVID, Russia-Ukraine crisis, everything else that's gone on around that. But what's really been core to the growth of the business, and I'd say COVID has actually played quite a large part in driving this, has been the real push towards sustainability. Mm. I'm going to use a broader definition of sustainability here beyond the environmental benefits. I'm talking about business sustainability. So we work with fleets of all sizes, you know, from a couple of vehicles up to hundreds of thousands of vehicles, you know, globally. So for that larger sector, there is more a push on the environmental side of it, the fleet electrification side of it, the reducing in scope emissions, and how data through telematics can help, you know, inform all of that. And that's great, you know, very important. You know, there are global objectives that everyone's working through, and Geotab's no different to that. But sustainability for, you know, someone running a fleet of 5 vehicles is very different. Sustainability for them is, can I afford to stay in business next year? How can telematics help me drive down my costs and drive my efficiency? And that feeds into sustainability, because if you can get them economically sustainable, then at a point in time, they're going to look at the environmental sustainability aspect and come to Geotab and use our data to help inform that. So I use that as a broad definition, but I think COVID has really helped focus the minds a little bit on both the environmental and economical imperative of what sustainability means. And we're very much behind that. And we're actually ahead of the curve when it comes to sustainability, I would say.
David, all of this, I mean, it's great. I love the focus on people. I love that passion to take on a challenge and see real change. And now at the sort of forefront of driving sustainability and developing that whole idea, I want to take you back, if I can. I just want to get a little bit more around the mindset of David and where it came from, because you've mentioned that sort of not having a plan, because you clearly have a plan and a clear one, but being happy in an environment that is mildly chaotic, you know, sort of there's no playbook, there's no roadmap, it's a challenging situation. But you also talked about, you know, you got to 21, to whatever it was, when you were back from university and Dad said, "You're not staying here, son. Get out." And
need to work on the accent there, Paul. He's a Glaswegian, so you need to adjust
that. Okay, right. Yeah, so that probably sounded pretty scary then, I would imagine. Sorry, Dad. Was your dad a driving influence on you? And was he, I mean, hard taskmaster, maybe not that in that sense, but was he an engine behind you throughout your growing up?
Yeah, I've thought about this quite a lot as I get older and, you know, as I've had a child of my own and, you know, all of that. And I would say my life, my career hasn't necessarily been shaped by an individual, but experiences, situations, and of course people form part of that. You know, in terms of my work ethic, I'd say that is probably very much derived from my father. You know, he was came from a single parent household. His father left when he was 4, didn't have an inside bathroom until he left home and, you know, had his own life essentially outside of that. Didn't have a formal education, you know, no qualifications at all, actually, and worked his way up to be very successful in IT, worked around the world. And he only achieved that because, you know, he grafted very hard. And he was also smart, you know, give him credit for that.
Yeah.
But that's certainly where the work ethic, you know, came from my perspective. I guess, you know, the one pivotal moment that kind of, I spoke about it earlier, about being comfortable and not wanting to take a risk, but having to push myself to take a risk. And I guess the one situation that always stands out to me and is probably the driver that made me risk averse in the early aspects of my career was I was 17. You know, I'd had a very, I guess, blessed life, you know, good schools, never wanted for anything. You know, dad wasn't around very much because he was always working, but mom was always there and she was very loving and, you know, supportive. But at that time, my dad was running his own business. He decided to go into the restaurant business. Uh-oh. You know, and restaurants don't last very long. And sure enough, this was a prime example. So 17, everything had been great. To all of a sudden, business was gone, family home at risk, coming out of private school. And I remember standing in the kitchen with my mum, and the phone rang. So she picked it up. It was the optician. She'd sent her glasses in to get new lenses put in. And they phoned up to say they'd broken the frames trying to put the new lenses in. And she broke down in tears because she couldn't afford. We didn't have money for her to go and buy new glasses. That's how bad things had gone. Mm. So my motivation at that point, and it sounds bizarre, and people just don't get it. I say my motivation is to always be in a position where I can afford a pair of glasses. Right?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Never mind.
And that's, you know, I remember that situation clear as day. And I can see John laughing now.
It was my terrible joke.
I know.
Yeah. Dear Lord.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can see that. Very good, Paul.
Yeah, sorry, David. This was a very serious point you were making
So that's one of the personal kind of motivators behind it. And that's what kind of keeps me always kind of pushing forward. And then, you know, obviously want to be a good role model for my daughter.
And that's a really good news story, isn't it? Because, I mean, obviously you've already touched on the whole process of having IVF and things like that. And this process. So, I mean, how did that feel to kind of find that your wife was pregnant and, you know, you were going to be having what now is your daughter?
It was joyous and petrifying at the same time. So it was conflicted emotions. Let me tell you how my wife broke the news to me. So I'd started at Halo, taken that risk, joined Halo. They didn't have much money in the bank. I didn't find out until my first couple of days there. So it's like, geez, you know, is this going to work out, et cetera? But hey, it didn't matter. We didn't have dependents. And my wife said, go for it. So, you know, it didn't work out. I'm going to be a house husband and work around the house.
Yeah.
So end of the first week, you know, central London, met my wife in the Savoy. We went for cocktail. She said, come on, we'll go and celebrate the first week. Like, great. She's going to take me to the Savoy. I'm not going to have to pay. Great. Love that. Sitting down, she goes, how's your first week? And I went, oh, geez, there's a lot to take in, et cetera. And said, yeah, well, you're going to have to kind of figure it out and make it work because we're having a baby. Okay, really? No pressure. So I've gone out of that comfortable, safe environment, pushed by my wife, the encouraging push, and then basically don't F it up. So that's how the news came out.
It kind of sounds like you married your dad in some ways.
Oh, it's a whole different ballgame.
No, in that passionate way, gosh, it sounds terrible.
She's a very direct Dubliner.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay. So that David, Celtic blood.
I detect an accent? I keep thinking Antipodean, and then you've got Scottish around you, Irish around you. Where's your accent from?
I'm a mongrel.
You're a proper mongrel. Yeah, what have you got in you?
Well, born in England.
Yeah.
Lived in the south of England for a long time, till I was about 9. Moved to Belgium from 9 till I was about 16. So I went to an international school there. So surrounded by Australians, Americans, Greeks, French, Italians. It was a true multinational school. So, you know, some lessons in French, some in Italian, others in English. So a real melting pot, and that informed it. Then lived in Scotland for a while, spent a year living in Dublin, married an Irish woman, obviously. So yeah, that's the melting pot.
Yeah, it's definitely there, Dublin. When you say Dublin, you can hear it as a rather than it. There's a certain something which just rounds those words off, and it fascinates me. Because are you good with voices? Are you good with accents? Do you pick them up really quickly?
I wouldn't say it's something I've ever tried.
If I'm being honest. Might now.
I might now get a side hustle in being a voiceover artist or something. I don't know. But no, I picked up languages pretty well at school. You know, French was one that came relatively naturally. It was almost kind of forced living in a French-speaking country for the most part, living in the Flemish part of the country, but going to school in the French part. And then I had some Italian friends. So, you know, it kind of came on.
You talk about not sitting in a comfortable chair, just to go off completely at a tangent. And you've been in your role now for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The chair is becoming perhaps a little softer than it was the day you screeched in January 2020, but isn't comfortable yet because clearly you've got a five-year plan to deliver.
Yeah.
What in your ideal world is the offer that you couldn't refuse if somebody gave you the perfect job?
Ooh. It's very tough because I've been thinking about this on my Geotab journey, and I'm very much enjoying what I'm doing and the direction the business is going in. Not just the region I run, but the direction we're going in globally and also within the European, Middle East and Africa, and the additional responsibilities I'm taking on. And, you know, I haven't had an offer that's made me go, that's better than where I am. You know, I'm not naive enough to necessarily believe that the grass is greener. And as long as Geotab keeps challenging me, and it does, which is what I love about the business, keeps affording me, you know, new opportunities, greater responsibilities. You know, it would probably take an incredible opportunity to grow something to really sway my mind. And I just don't see anything really out there at the moment.
Wow. And that's the size of the wonderful challenge that you have at Geotab, isn't it? That here is somebody who knows that in their very core, they don't just sit back and accept. And, you know, you stayed in a business for 10 years, but you got to a point where you said, no, enough. But for you, there's no vision outside of Geotab. They must be a heck of an employer.
It's been incredible, you know, and I'm not just saying that because obviously I'm working here at the moment. But, you know, it's probably the first time I've ever been employed anywhere where I haven't wanted to look outside or felt the need to look outside. What's driven that? I think a large part of it is the culture of the business. You know, Geotab is still privately owned by the Kors family. And there's a real family sentiment here. You know, just reflecting back, you know, we've spoken about COVID a little bit. But going into that first lockdown, the incredible uncertainty that existed in the world at that point in time, concerns around future employment, etc. Neil, the founder of the business, came on and said, we're not making any redundancies. Everyone is going to have a job. If things get tight, we can bring some money in. It's okay. No one needs to worry. You're all going to get an allowance to set up a home office to make sure you've got a good chair and a monitor and a table and that you've got a good environment. My only ask of you, this was from him, is that you all remain productive. And, you know, that was incredibly motivating and galvanizing, particularly during those times of great uncertainty. And that kind of thing has just continued as the company's, you know, grown. Geotab essentially has a no-blame culture, but it holds people accountable. You can make a mistake, just don't make it repeatedly. You know, learn from it, collaborate, share knowledge, low on ego. And because it's a privately owned company, there's a long-term vision, which is something that everyone's pushing behind. And I think, you know, we're probably all on this call being in businesses where there's a bit more of a short-term focus, you know, an exit point or a strategy, and actually just being in that kind of environment where there is that long-term goal, where you're continually being pushed, where, you know, fortunately I'm rated quite well for the job I do. So I'm asked to do other things. And as long as that continues, I don't see a point where I would want to leave Geotab?
I mean, that's the thing that strikes me. You know, as we've talked to you, David, what's come out, you know, I've mentioned about the roadmap thing, the kind of comfortable in change and challenge. And in fact, you kind of thrive on challenge. So the more you push yourself and the more you're given problems to solve, the more likely you are to just go, right, okay, roll my sleeves up, get stuck into this. Because I think this is... The automotive sector is in a world of change, and we don't know what the future looks like. And there is no roadmap because we tried this once 100 years ago, right, to do electric vehicles and or vehicles as a whole. And we went down a diesel route and now we're coming back. I was talking to somebody last night and they were saying, you know, when were we last in this kind of environment? And it's like 150 years ago, back into the Industrial Revolution, you know, however long ago that was. I'm not very good at history and I didn't get any qualifications either. but it's back a long time ago. I know that much. And so this feels like the perfect storm for you, doesn't it?
It is. It's a perfect storm as an employer in a sector.
Yeah.
You know, there is, as you said, you know, biggest change probably since horse and cart to combustion engine.
Yeah.
You know, arguably within our sector. And also just the opportunities that exist. We talk a lot about electrification, but also, you know, I really enjoy the debate around, is that the right fuel choice for HGV construction materials, you know, et cetera? What's that going to look like? What's mobility more broadly going to look like in 5, 10 years? Having spent time in the mobility sector, is vehicle ownership going to be a thing? Or, you know, are these brands that we've all worked with for years, you know, Mercedes 100-year history, other brands same, are they going to become white-labeled transportation solutions? You know, all of these debates and all of the changes that are coming on, I find incredibly interesting and satisfying to be part of those conversations. And as you said, you know, the kind of the, I wouldn't say necessarily the chaos, but there's, no one knows exactly where it's going to end.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you've got to try and enjoy the journey. And that's what I'm trying to do now. You know, enjoy the journey in the sector. We've got the vision for the business, which we're working towards. And we'll probably refine as we go forward. But, you know, as I said before, I've no interest in being anywhere else at this point in time.
It's interesting. I was listening to a podcast that we were recording a podcast. I was listening to a podcast from another person. Very good, actually, very good. But it was interesting. They were talking about travel and change and how that sets our minds on a journey of discovery, and it lights up our brain, you know, in terms of if you were to stick stickers on our brain and kind of do all the brainwave stuff as we travel and we experience new things and we have to adapt and change. It brings joy and happiness, actually, because it just kind of gets the brain going. And you're like, wow, we have a unique opportunity, I think. And David, I kind of, you know, my feeling is that what you've done so far and what you will do going forward is really the sum of everything that you've done to this point. And it's great to sort of see the words mentor and being pushed, and now you're mentoring and pushing. Because, you know, having known you for the last couple of years, I know that you're willing to give the unabridged version, you know, what I mean by that is, but you can be quite direct,
Paul. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I really value that. There's so few people that are sometimes brave enough. I think what gave you that willingness to be brave in that context?
So, you know, my father that we've touched upon before, he's quite a direct, you know, Glaswegian. Let's put it like that. Ryanair, Michael O'Leary was as direct a CEO as you'd probably ever, you know, encounter. And, you know, I sat on the same floor as him, several desks down. So I got to see at close quarters, you know, some of that. But I would say, you know, I've gone for probably a moderated approach to, you know, directness. I think there's a danger in, you know, being overly direct and not being empathetic to people. So I think, you know, as I've evolved and matured and, you know, all those things that come from life and work experiences, you know, I've just tempered it a little bit and tried to find, you know, what I think when it comes to leadership is you need to really understand the people under your care, in your care, and what the best approach is to get the best out of them. And for some, like you said, Paul, you know, you and I work together. I can be direct with you. You can be direct with me. That works for us.
Yeah, it does. Right?
Mm-hmm. I can do the same with another couple of my team, but others, you know, maybe it's a little bit more nurturing and it's, you know, an arm around the shoulder and, you know, a little bit more encouragement. So that's one of the things I've taken away from all the experiences I've had when it comes to management and leadership is you can't manage with a very broad brush or you can't lead with a very broad brush. You need to, particularly for those in your care, take the time to understand them. Take the time to appreciate who they are and what they need and how you can get the best out of them. Because if I can get the best out of them, it helps develop the business. It helps create opportunities for them. And it becomes almost, you know, a fulfilling prophecy.
Amazing. David, that I for me has been a real insight into you and obviously to Geotab as a whole, because I think you're personifying a brilliant culture within Geotab, one of, you know, find a problem, solve it, bring on your people effectively, challenge, encourage, put an arm around the shoulder, those in your care. What a lovely phrase that is, isn't it? Because you recognize that you have a responsibility. And, you know, for me, it feels like Geotab UK, and as you broaden into other areas of Geotab, anything that you're going to touch is going to be in good shape.
Thank you.
Have you got any final thoughts?
Very kind words.
No,
very kind words. Thank you, Paul.
No,
pleasure. Yeah, to reinforce that, actually, I've worked with Geotab people for the last couple of years, and I've not had the time with you, David, that I've had with some of your colleagues. And talking to you now, it explains an awful lot of the people that I have seen who deliver brilliance. And I'm not overly inflating their expertise, their skill. I'm being genuine in the people that I deal with who are meticulous in their work, deliver absolutely what they say they're going to deliver, and do it with a smile on their face. And when I go to a Geotab stand, I get more hugs from your people than I do pretty much anywhere else, because they are genuinely people first, not machines that process data to get insights. And I love that. And now I can see that that comes from you as well as from them. So it's a massive reflection on you, and thank you for your people, because they're amazing.
No, thank you for that very kind feedback. And that's, you know, exactly what I hoped to create all those years ago when I joined Geotab. So very, very kind words. Thank you very much.
And you guys have also been, you know, the first people to jump right in, and along with My Energy, and then subsequently a little while after the AA, you are our founder sponsors. You've invested in us as individuals, and I'm a beneficiary of your direct investment, but also the wider investment in this transitional tool called the EV Cafe, you know, this place where we can get stuff on the table and talk about it. And we are very grateful for your long-term investment, because it's been over a couple of years now. So it's been fantastic.
Can I just say, Paul, before we finish, it's important for people who are listening to this to understand that we are very, very direct people, and we are very open and honest about the relationship we have. And can I just say, but nothing I have said today has been influenced by the fact that Geotab and David and the team sponsor the EV Cafe. They are utterly brilliant, and the business side of this is quite separate from anything that we're discovering here. An utterly brilliant group of people delivering great insight and helping us move to clean transport. Stunning piece of work. And you know what? If we were, for whatever reason, to part ways, and I hope we don't, I will always have a very, very special place in my heart for Geotab and all the people that we work with.
Well, thank you very much, John. And just on the EV Cafe, you know, I think what you guys are doing is incredibly important. You know, I think when we spoke a couple of years ago, when we discussed that initial sponsorship, what was incredibly important was the education piece. And, you know, we're fully behind that. And, you know, my personal view is when it comes to electrification, sustainability is it's not going as well as the evangelists would have you believe. It's not going nearly as badly as the naysayers or Rowan Atkinson would have you believe. It's somewhere in the middle. And that's what I see the EV Cafe doing. It's busting myths, but accepting realities as well. And I think that's really important to have that ground level voice in the space.
Thank you.
It is kind. And that's exactly what we want to be. We don't want to kind of be so blinkered that we can't see the reality of the challenges. And we want to celebrate the opportunity to do things today, which is one of the things that's great about the Geotab solution. You can help with sustainability now in the current environment, but also moving things forward. And that's obviously what we're really keen to do, but in a way that is sustainable, because we don't want people to start something that they can't finish or can't grow into. And we've got to get those decisions made right. And with Geotab, and I'll go on, I'll say it, the data that you provide, but it gives us the insight that we need. And we've had a wonderful insight today into David Savage, as much as we've had insight into Geotab. So, David, thank you so much for your time today. And it's been a real joy to celebrate a little bit of your life, your journey, and your passion to deliver a change in difficult circumstances and also build for a really positive future. So, David Savage, Geotab Vice President for UK, I think is your formal title,
it's
right?
A very North American title. Yeah, Vice President.
Yeah, Vice President. Yeah, that's got a ring to it, hasn't it? Anyway,
there Mr. We go. Vice President to you.
Mr. Vice President. But anyway, David Savage, thank you. It's been a joy.
So, thank you very much, guys.
Cheers, for David. Everybody out there, please do go and check out the Geotab website. Connect with David on LinkedIn, of course. There's all those places where we can build our community. And, of course, head over to the EV Cafe website. There'll be information about Geotab as a sponsor of ours, as we know, and lots of other podcasts and lots of other things like the LinkedIn page to follow too. So do engage, do join us, and do be a part of the EV Cafe community. Have a great day, everybody.